a drunk driver hit our car and crushed me. Sternum popped out, nine ribs broken, six snapped, internal bleeding, intestines were severed, paralyzed from the waist down in Mexico at 10 o'clock at night in a hurricane.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and today we have an exceptional guest. We've interviewed his business partner and co-founder of Giant Worldwide way back in episode 349, where he talked about cracking the communication code. We'll link to that in the show notes. But today we have, and not to be outdone, we have Jeremy Kubitschek. He is a globally recognized speaker, author, and leadership expert dedicated to helping leaders multiply healthy influence and self-awareness. As I said, he's the co-founder of Giant Worldwide, where he equips leaders and organizations such as Nike, Delta, and Pfizer, to name a few, to build cultures of trust, peace, and performance through practical systems of people development. He's here with us today to talk about their newest book that he and Steve Cockrum wrote together, The Voice-Driven Leader, which is available everywhere. And I can't wait to get into this conversation. Jeremy, welcome to The Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today.
Dr. Richard, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you. Thanks for letting me jump in.
Absolutely. You know, we had a fun chat before we began talking about sports and grain silos and all kinds of things. So, you know, before we get into the book, and I did this with Steve, I did this with everybody, I'm so fascinated by people's why and the decisions that can shape their life and move them towards what they're doing in the world, making an impact as you are. So take us back in the Jeremy Kubitschek time machine and talk to us about some of those seminal moments that transformed your journey.
Yeah, okay. A couple that were really interesting. Number one, when I was 21 years old, I had a professor in my college, small little college, and he basically taught me how to use business for a platform for a good. And so I moved to Moscow, Russia, right after the walls came down, like right after the Soviet Union. I lived there 2 years, started what's now the largest private school in Moscow. It's called the Moscow Economic School. But we were trying to show how to use capitalism for good and not bad. But we were there for after 70 years of communism, and we saw what it did to the people and how it created domination led to abdication. And it was just fascinating. So I was shaped 2 years. I lived there during, it was like Chicago in the 30s. It was like mafia. We had client assassinated. We had car bombs. We had mafia run-ins. We had a coup attempt that we were stuck in for 3 days. And so that 2 years of heavy combat, crazy, it really affected the way that I see the world, because I saw it from their view and real time, you know? And so it was like, I lived history for a couple of years. And then fast forward about 10 years later, my wife and I were on a vacation in Mexico. We got trapped by a hurricane. We got hit by a drunk driver and had a near death experience. So I literally was gone 4.5 or so minutes. And when you hear about near-death experiences, I'm one of those guys. And I saw all types of things. I experienced all types of miracles and different things. So that completely changed my worldview. To get to the point of death and then to be able to come back and then go, okay, I've got another 40 years, 50 years, whatever that looks like.
That resonates so strongly with me. I've often talked about the couple that I've had myself, and I am curious, if you don't mind going into it before we talk about leadership, and this is a direction I never thought we would go today, but would you mind sharing what that near-death experience was like?
Yeah. So we had just watched the movie Signs with Mel Gibson. Remember that? Crop Circles? And we were literally leaving the movie theater because we got moved from our resort because of the hurricane into a really shady downtown Cancun hotel. And I didn't want to stay in it. It was such a flea bag. So we're like, hey, the hurricane's going to be here, the eye, in like 4 hours. Let's go see a movie. It's right across the street. And it's showing. So we did. It was a Category 3 hurricane, and they were showing a movie. So it was just me and my wife and our friends that we were the only ones in the movie theater watching this movie. And I get back into the car, and in the movie, he loses his wife. And so he gives up his faith in God. He becomes bitter, angry, all these things, right? And then the aliens show up. It's weird. The point, though, was the movie sparked something in me, and I was a very ambitious 20. I was 32 at the time when this happened, but I was a very ambitious 20-something. I had started companies, private equity. I had sold businesses, started businesses. Very aggressive, very ambitious person. And I get into the car, a taxi takes us 2 blocks back to our hotel. And I had this conversation that went like this: "Hey God, am I your man? I don't want to be like Mel Gibson. If anything happens to Kelly, my wife, I'll trust you. Anything happens to my 3 kids, I'll trust you. Huh. Anything happens to me, I'll trust you." Had never had that conversation like that. And all of a sudden, I said that. In a microsecond, my wife screams, "Watch out." And I turn and look, and a drunk driver hit our car and crushed me. Sternum popped out, 9 ribs broken, 6 snap, internal bleeding, intestines were severed, paralyzed from the waist down, in Mexico at 10 o'clock at night in a hurricane. So then about 20, 30 minutes in, I'm realizing I'm not going to make it. And my wife's trying to help me. My friends are looking for help. I'm screaming outwardly, but internally, I'm like, okay, we just talked about this. I trust you. I can't believe that just happened. And I'm looking at my sternum out here, and I'm going, I'm paralyzed. And so as it started to happen, I then get real serious, and I ask those questions. I was like, was I your man? Was I a good husband? Was I a good dad? And then my wife didn't hear any of that. It was all in my head, all me and God. And she looks over at me, and she said, "I just want you to know." I said, "I'm not going to make it." I didn't say it, but I showed it in my face. And I was starting to breathe my last breath. And she goes, "I want you to know you are God's man. You are a great husband. And I was a great dad." And I'm like, are you kidding me? That just happened? And I breathed my last breath. And I began to float above this car in Mexico. And literally, it was like the slowest fade you could imagine in a movie. It was like, and I got above the car, and I could see, I was up high enough, I could see the other car. I could see our car. I could see the people running around. I could see the chaos of the everything, the rain, all of it. And I was at complete peace. And so I eventually literally got to this point where I was completely at peace, totally. And I was moving slowly, slowly in a direction. But anyway, a number of miracles happened. And our friends came in, back in the car, prayed over us. Pray over me. I come right back into the car, and then the ambulance shows up. And then it's another long story for another time of 10 days of surgery and other crazy miracles and things that took place that, you know, as a business guy, I've started 30 something companies. It's just like, it changes you in the way that you view life.
You know, a lot of people, they've done research on this. And again, we're down a rabbit hole I never thought we would talk about today, but they've researched people who have had near-death experiences, and they describe what you describe, right? Floating above the body. So 10 days where it's touch and go, and actually, had you not been in the eye of the hurricane, they probably couldn't have gotten an ambulance to you anyway. So a lot of things had to go right. But the recovery, obviously, to where you are today, took much, much longer. And so similarly, when I was young and making a left-hand turn, a kid ran a red light and slammed through and broke my back too. My recovery was long. And I had a lot of time to think about my life and to think about things. What was that recovery time like for you?
It was a good 6 months of journey, but I didn't, like, at the time, I had just quit my private equity job. And they thought I was a lunatic because I wanted to start my own company. I didn't even have one client. I had one verbal client. And so it was like, I felt the pressure that I had to hustle. So I didn't recover, get a lot of peace. I kind of like manned up. I'm like, oh, I'm good. And it wasn't until later that we found that I had 9 ribs broken. At the time, we thought I broke 2-3 ribs, not 6, and fractured 3. I mean, it was just Mexico's, let's just say the... The care in Mexico was not as thorough as it would have been here. And so once I got back and realized all this, then it was just physical. But my mental, I felt the pressure of trying to get a startup off the ground. And so I kind of probably delayed a lot of processing till later. And it took a long time for me to like realize what all happened in that period of time. And so I don't know if it was the same with you.
Well, it's interesting. And what I'm hearing too, you know, you have these two experiences, right? You have the Russia thing where there was coups and mafia trying to kill your clients. And it was a very volatile and dangerous time to be living in the former Soviet Union. But that shaped really the way you view capitalism and using capitalism for good. And then you almost get killed by a drunk driver in a hurricane. And so I'm wondering, before we get to the book, but just as an overarching generality, how those two experiences that you talk about combine to shape your worldview.
If I'm being just completely honest, if you're listening to this and I think I had basically got to the reality that self-sufficiency, that I am God, and that I'm the man, and I'm going to make it happen. And like, I had an opportunity to die to get to the end of that. And only when I could get to the end of like, I am got to make it happen for me, and I am the source, and I am God, and I am the man, then could I actually benefit other people? Because it's like, I actually had to die to get to like see new life and like see life in a different way. And so it's changed the way that I approach performance. It's changed the way that I approach ambition. I'm very ambitious as a person, but I call it redeemed ambition. It's like I've redeemed the ambition. It's not just like, oh, I'm just going to be a better person. No, it's like I actually have this chance. Like, hey, I did almost die. What would it look like to live in freedom, to live in peace, to live with contentment? But I still have to perform. I still have to do things. So it's like clean performance, if that makes sense. It's like when race cars, if they get out and they have clean air, they're going to produce at a higher level than dirty air that's behind other cars chasing things. So for me, it's like the game, the life I've been trying to live is like, what would it look like to have clean performance, redeemed ambition? Still going to do things. I'm still going to be aggressive, but I'm doing it in right motive, right intent. Does that make sense?
It does. And the reason I asked the question is because we're here to talk about your book, The Voice-Driven Leader. And certainly our experiences inform how we show up in the world, and certainly from the standpoint of leadership. So I saw that there was a connection there that I needed to have you unravel.
And I think the connection point, if I'm just tying the stories into and like why. So the idea of the voice-driven leader is like, okay, Dr. Richard, if I know you and I know your wiring and your personality and who you actually are, I'm going to communicate and relate to you based on who you are, not force you to do work based on who I am. So it's actually the ultimate act of serving and loving other people, because I'm interested in you more than in me, because I'm not trying to get you to do what I want you to do to get some sort of credibility or look at me. I'm not proving something based on who I am. So what happened is, it's like when I lived in Russia, there was we had a team over there, and two of us decided to go after Russian and really learn the Russian language. And so I went really hard after it and studied a lot, and it was kind of a natural knack. So And when I start speaking Russian, it's, if you knew Russian, then, and I'm speaking Russian, then you're going to relate differently than if I force you to speak English. And so it's the same idea. I had more influence than other people because I chose to speak their language, not force them to speak mine. So the idea with a voice-driven leader and anyone that you're around is, if I can be curious and if I can be more focused on you than on me, then my chance of influence, my chance of impact in your life, my chance to be significant and memorable are going to go up way more than if I'm forcing you to relate, to come to my world. Does that make sense?
Complete sense. You know, I've not been in Russia and certainly not been in a country during a transition period like you did. But, you know, in my travels overseas, anytime I made an attempt to speak the language, I got further than if I tried to, you know, assume they could speak English or, you know, just speak English. So it absolutely makes perfect sense. So I'm curious, though, and I'm really excited to start diving into the contents of the book. Why now? Why did you write this book now?
One, it was like a final canon of Steve and I. We've been trying to say this for about 10, 15 years now, but we basically have gotten it to the point. So we built the Five Voices AI. So we've now leveraged AI to make it easier for people to know how to connect with other people. So what's it like to be on the other side of you? And so it's this whole concept. And then how do I communicate and connect more clearly? So with AI, now we're like, oh my gosh, it's never been easier to be able to learn and understand other people and then leverage the technology to connect with them more effectively. So we launched with the book, Five Voices AI. And so now we've got fivevoices.com, and people can now learn. We believe that we created the Five Voices. It's a simplest version. It's simpler than the Big Five. It's simpler than Myers-Briggs. It takes it. And so it sticks and stays. And it's made for, like, if a 13-year-old can get it, it will scale it inside an organization. So we made it to scale. But now we basically said, we're at this stage of our world where everything is hyper-personalization. It was so complicated before, but now because of AI, it does the work for you. If I know that you are, let's just say, ENTJ or a pioneer guardian and giant and Five Voices speak, or a whatever, I can now ask AI, okay, I'm a connector, he's a pioneer, how would I connect with this? Or can you take this email and can you help me understand how to write an email or performance review? I'm a connector. They're a nurturer. Let me speak their language. Can you write a performance review in their language? So we're even getting to the point, Dr. Richard, where we could take books. Like I helped someone with, he is a pioneer. He'd written this health book. His wife is a nurturer. He's trying to get her to understand the book. She doesn't understand it. I took one chapter, the key hook of the book. I took chapter 4. I put it into our GPT. I rewrote it, same book, but I had it write it to a nurture connector. It rewrote the same content into her language. She reads the book, starts weeping. She's like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. He's like, well, this is what I've been trying to say. No. He wrote it as a pioneer. We rewrote it to a nurturer, and she read it and understood it where she couldn't before.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go.
And to your point, we're moving into a world, Jeremy, where this degree of hyper customization for an hyper individualization is possible with technology. So I love this. And obviously you kind of led us with what being a voice driven leader looks like for you. But what I want to do, because you've dropped a couple of these descriptors, let's talk about the five voices individually and what they are.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So we basically have done all the research, worked on this for, again, 15 years, but it's based on five distinct voices, and there's 16 variations of voices. The quietest voice is the nurturer. They make up 43% of the population. 70% of them are women. So are female. So it's really interesting to get 43%, and they are very quiet, but they're like chicken soup for the soul. They want to help everyone. They want everyone to get along. They're like the relational glue of our world. So they make up, they work in as teachers and they work as nurses, and they work as stay at home moms, and they work in lots of places to nurture the next generation. The next one is the creative. They make up 9% of the population, very quiet, introverted. They see the future more than anyone, but they're conceptual architects. They take things in their head and they put it all together into this roadmap blueprint, but they have a hard time explaining it to people. And sometimes people don't get them because they have it all in their head, but they're very important. The next one is the guardian, 30% of the population. And 70% of that group is male. So you're going to find them as detail-oriented, black and white, grid systems, soldiers, accountants, very logical, very orderly, A to B. And then the next group gets louder. The voice gets louder to the connector. That's where I am. It's 11% of the population. You're going to find them. They're like bees. They pollinate. They always have a guy. What do you need? You're looking for a truck? Oh, I got a guy. They just love to connect people to aspirations. And then the last grouping is the pioneer, 7% of the population. They are the loudest voice, and they make up the majority of they're hired as majority of executives. They're over misrepresented because they value winning, and they love to. They're like generals. Take that mountain. They allocate people and resources to take that hill. So if you understand those are the general five dynamics, well, then there could be a pioneer connector, pioneer guardian, pioneer creative. That second voice will shape them, but they're still in the main category. So we made it simple enough for a 13-year-old to get. So instead of saying, oh, I'm an INTJ, I don't know how to explain an INTJ, if you weren't in the group, but instead of me saying INTJ, I can say pioneer. Okay, I get it. You're a pioneer. Well, you're actually a pioneer creative as INTJ versus a pioneer. We get it. So I can speak pioneer, nurturer. I can speak connector. Those are things people can adopt and understand very quickly. So we took that and then we built that into the Five Voices AI. And now you can drop. So then if you take the assessment, then it knows the other person already. So it knows that Tracy's a guardian. It knows that I'm a connector. So now it's going to give me specific insights for her.
It's very cool. And essentially what you've done is you've created a model of code types. And then using AI, you've made a Rosetta Stone out of that to where people can connect to each other. So I like this a lot. And my world is assessment. My background is assessment. So this very much speaks to me. And I know that because we're talking about different percentages of people, like you said, you could be a pioneer creative, that there are still nuances of ways to communicate with people. But I'm curious, because we're using technology to do a lot of this, in some ways, to me, using AI is a lot like tiptoeing on a razor blade, right? Because the technology is great. It's getting better all of the time. But there are still pitfalls with that. And so I'm wondering, because a lot of being a good leader is understanding the humanity of the person across from you, right? And so, you know, for years, the big phraseology in business was talking about one's emotional intelligence, right? Which obviously plays a large part in what you guys do. I'm wondering, how do you draw that line between becoming over-reliant on AI and not losing your humanity in the process of being a good leader?
Here's my thoughts. Everything is, people are either over or under everything. You can over-communicate. You can under-share. You can overpower. You can underpower, right? So the whole idea of what I've found is the biggest issue is people relying on what they've always done, which is the definition of insanity. So they underuse it. So we would actually say, no, people are underutilizing, especially in our case, by Voices AI, because what happens is if you become curious about other people, the benefits are going to be best for them and you. Most people are under curious. So they just do what they do and they go, I don't understand. Why don't they get this? I texted them. I emailed them. I told them, I'm like, yeah, you're forcing them to speak your language because you haven't taken the time necessary to understand the other person. Who are they?
How much of it do you think is that they're genuinely under curious or that they don't know or haven't been taught the proper way to ask the questions in a way that's meaningful to the other individual?
That's it. And it's viewed as too complicated in the past. Wait, I got to learn 16 different types of, I don't have time for that. No one has time for that. So we always tell them, like, well, start with your spouse, start with your kids. And that's what happened to me. My wife and I started with understanding my wife and my kids. And when that happened, I realized, oh my goodness, my wife's a guardian. And under pressure, she interrogates our kids. Okay. And my oldest is a creative and my middle son's at guardian. My youngest is a nurturer. By the way, to listen, we're all of them. We can play all five voices because by nurture, you've learned how to do it. We're very attuned and very smart. But by nature, you were born in a certain way. Like there was a certain fabric. You know that if you have multiple kids, you know all your kids are different. So therefore, there's a uniqueness about them. So I became curious about my kids. Then my wife started watching and she became curious. And then the self-awareness hit her. Oh my gosh, I'm interrogating them. I'm pushing them away. I need to relate differently to my daughter. So the curiosity became, how can I become more effective? Because what I was doing wasn't working in the teenager years. So that is what happened to my wife and I. And then we started going, huh, I wonder how that would work with my business partners. I wonder what that looks like with my teammates. And then all of a sudden it led to this. This is for everyone. It's a way to engage people and a way to maximize your influence with people. So if I'm going to maximize influence, I need to know who I am. I need to know who they are. And once I know who I am and who they are, I can understand stress behavior and predictive performance. And then I'm going to try different things. This never works. Every time I do this, it doesn't work. Let me try this. Oh, they connected with that. Okay. So now that curiosity led to reinforcement.
This makes sense. And so as you've been talking and these five different voices, this makes very much intuitive sense, right? What I'm curious about is we have people in the workplace who are of the baby boomer generation, less of them, obviously. And we have people that are Gen Z, right, in the workplace. And so there's obviously significant differences in worldviews and how they interact. So talk to us about how these different generations play together.
We're working on this right now with an expert team. And it's fascinating because stress behavior of a Gen Z guardian versus a boomer guardian, it's still going to be interrogation, but how they do interrogation is going to show up differently. So it's the what, it's still there. It's the how that's different because of technology, about how, how it shows up is really unique. So we've been going through, now we're going through all the generations through every voice and how that relates. And that's really the research that we're working on right now, which is really super fun and super interesting.
What has that research? I know you're early on in it, but I love ripping the tablecloth off the table and just asking. So what surprised you about that data so far?
What surprised me is it's not as, the dichotomy is not as much as I thought it was. Meaning the what is still in there. So like stress behavior for a connector like me, the stress behavior, when I reach stress, it, my behavior leads to cyber warfare, which means subtle slander. So I can slander people and you won't even know it. I mean, it's subtle. It's a little snarky, a little cynical, a little jaded. But so the what at the boomer, Gen X, all the way Gen, and I've got 320 something. So I'm in the my kids are in their 20s. But all the way down to this next generation, it's still in there. But the passivity, it, like the how strong, it's really about the boomers are a lot stronger at it versus the Gen Zs are a lot more abdicating and a lot more behind the scenes. And like, they don't want to, but they'll do it via, it's just, it's really about the going to the source of like the medium they're using. The medium of tech and how they do it still in there. Like it's still cyber warfare. They're just doing it through DMs or really subtle comments and reposting. Whereas the next generation or the previous generations are not using social media to do it. So my point is technology is actually a major part of that. But what I was surprised was it's not that vastly different.
That's interesting. It is interesting. So as we're thinking about being a voice-driven leader, what are the things, you know, we've talked a little bit about using the five voices to understand the person across from us, right? What are the pitfalls? What are the things we ought not be doing?
So the entire book is a map. It's like a roadmap blueprint. It's a development plan. It's like, okay, you got a brand new employee or you have someone you're just wanting to try this with at home, your kids or whatever, but like you're just starting. So what happens in that first development process? So it's really onboarding. Think of it like at work, if you are onboarding someone, they're brand new. Well, what needs to happen? Well, I need to know who they are. I need them to know who I am. So we have to create common language, the five voices. We need to know the process and they need to start knowing my expectations. Expectations are everything. If you don't know where I'm trying to take you and not very clear, so now I'm going to start developing you. And now as I develop you, you're going to start realizing you don't know what you don't know. So you're going to become, you're consciously incompetent. So you're aware that you don't know what to do in this role. So the pitfall is called the pit of despair. And the pit of despair is in the bottom right of this development square in this book. And it's when you're confidence and your competence are at all-time low. And so I have to make sure that I've provided enough vision, enough time, and enough direct expectation and help you going, look, no, I'm going to help you. You're going to watch me. I'm going to apprentice you. I'm going to get you to conscious competence. I need you to get engaged and I need you to be empowered. So I'm moving you to this empowerment level, but it's a process. Well, if I'm doing that with a pioneer, it's very different than if I'm doing that with a nurturer. A nurturer is going to need a lot of love, a lot of support, and a lot of camaraderie. The pioneer is like, don't smother me, move out of my way. Tell me when I'm doing wrong, be very direct with me. So if you can understand how to develop people through the lens of personality, you'll miss some of the pitfalls. You'll actually go faster because now we're giving you the language. We're giving you the roadmap and we're now giving you the AI tool that says, I've got a creative, he's in conscious incompetence. I'm a connector. How do I best connect with him so he doesn't fall into the pit of despair?
Jeremy, I wish we had more time to talk today. This has been such a fascinating discussion and the time has blown by. But as you know, I like to wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question, and that is, what is your biggest helping, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
One of the things I do every single morning, I do something called a call up. When I'm in the shower, I call myself up into who I am and my identity, and I get rid of any negativity that's in my mind, in my life. So I'm calling myself unto who I am in my position or authority, and I remind myself, and then I get rid of any negativity so it doesn't have any impact in my day. And so if you would voraciously go after eliminating negativity from your life, it's going to change everyone's life.
That times a thousand. So well said. The book is The Voice-Driven Leader, available everywhere books are sold. We'll have a link to it in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com as well. But Jeremy, if people loved our conversation, why wouldn't they have? And they want to learn more about you or Giant, where can they find that online?
If they want to take The Five Voices, it's free. It's fivevoices.com, spelled out the number five, and then voices.com. And then for me, it's jeremykubicek.com. It's not the easiest. Maybe you can put it in your show notes, but it's Jeremy with an IE, not a Y. Thanks, Mom. And then Kubicek is a good Czechoslovakian name. And so,
we're going to put it in the show notes. We're going to have it in the show notes. So guys, if you're in the gym or on the road, we got you covered. Everything Jeremy, IE Kubicek, will be featured in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com, including Five Voices AI. So you can try that out yourself and see what voice you have. Man, Jeremy, I've loved our conversation today. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Dr. Richard. See you.
Absolutely. And I want to thank each and every one of you as well who took time out of your day to listen to the conversation. If you liked it, if you're excited to learn what kind of a voice you have, give us a follow and a five-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.